Hello, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of Murder and Misery, our true crime podcast. We are your hosts. My name is Heather, and I know absolutely nothing about true crime.
And my name is Jillian, and I consider myself somewhat of a true crime expert.
Yes, Jill is our resident true crime expert. And we created this podcast so that Jill could teach me about all things true crime, both locally and nationally, and to take you guys along for the journey, so that if you too know nothing about true crime, you can learn something. Or maybe hear another perspective about stories you already know.
Okay, so this case was requested by Kayla. She's an OG listener of the pod, so thank you, Kayla, for this suggestion. But it is really heavy. So I'm looking at Heather because she's already like, I hate this, and I haven't even gotten into it. So before we get into the actual case, I do need to disclose that the story contains mention of abduction, severe sexual assault, animal abuse, suicide, and torture, along with, like, it's just really, really bad. So if you're...
Maybe I should skip this episode.
Yeah. It's bad, so I just wanted...
My face is all scrunched up for those of you who cannot see, which is everybody.
She has her eyes closed.
I'm not excited.
Listener discretion is advised. So we're going to start off with the perpetrator, in this case, Ariel Castro. I know we're jumping right in, but even though I love a good suspenseful moment, I don't want anyone to think for a second that this guy is the victim. Ariel was born on July 10th of 1960 to Pedro Castro and Lillian Rodriguez. He was born in Puerto Rico, and when he was a young kid, his parents divorced. His mother and three of his nine siblings moved to Pennsylvania before eventually moving again and settling down in Cleveland, Ohio. This is where his father had moved and some of his other distant family members, so he moved there to be closer to them. Ariel graduated from Lincoln West High School, located in Cleveland, Ohio, in 1979. He then went on to get married to Grimilda Figueroa, and they went on to have four children and bought a house at 2207 Seymour Avenue in Cleveland in 1992. Their marriage didn't last, though, as they ended up splitting in 1996 after Grimilda said she was severely abused by Ariel, with him breaking and dislocating multiple bones and sending death threats to her and her children. She even said he went as far as beating her so hard that a blood clot had formed on her brain.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm. Luckily, she and her children were able to get out of the home, though there were multiple reports of Ariel abducting his children and keeping them away from their mother. She never pressed charges because anytime she tried to, he literally sent them death threats. So she got scared and didn't. He worked as a bus driver, though, working with kids, which is scary. He worked at Cleveland Metropolitan School District until 2012 when he was fired for leaving a child alone on his bus. This wasn't the first time he had done it either. I know.
How do you do that? I feel like you have to be very... There's like lots of safety checks to make sure everybody gets off the bus.
I don't know. Maybe he did it on purpose.
Like, but did he forget?
He did the same thing in 2004.
Okay.
So this wasn't his first time, but...
That's very far apart, though.
Yeah. Well, who knows if he got caught in between, but the 2012 is when he like got fired for it.
As he probably should have been. That's not safe.
Yeah. Through all of this, he managed to keep a somewhat decent relationship with one of his daughters named Angie. She said he was a friendly, caring, doting man. His daughter's relationship with him is where this story really takes off. This is when in 2002, on August 23rd, a 21-year-old named Michelle Knight was trying to get to court as she was a mother who had unfortunately lost custody of her 2-year-old son. Michelle was born in April of 1981. She was born and raised in Cleveland, and growing up had dreams to become a firefighter or a veterinarian. She was never able to fulfill these dreams and ended up dropping out of high school after she had been bullied, assaulted, and become pregnant. Her son's name was Joey, but like I mentioned before, he was taken away after he had sustained an injury believed to be a result of Michelle's mother's abusive boyfriend. She was trying to walk to the courthouse for a custody hearing, but got lost and asked several strangers for directions. This is when Ariel offered her a ride, and Michelle accepted because she was friends with one of his daughters. She thought this meant that he was trustworthy. But unfortunately, this was not the case, and she never made it to her hearing. Once Michelle accepted the ride from Ariel, he started driving in the opposite direction of the courthouse. Obviously, Michelle got uncomfortable, but when she mentioned this, Ariel tried to calm her down by saying his dog had just had puppies and that he wanted to give one to Michelle to give to her son once she got back custody.
I don't want other people to choose when I have a dog.
Yeah.
What an odd thing to do.
Yeah. So
I'm taking you home to give you a puppy that you didn't ask for.
Right. When you're supposed to be
at court trying to get your son back.
Right. But unfortunately, Michelle had no choice but to go along with this, as she realized the passenger door of his truck had no internal handle to open it from the inside.
Not a fan of that.
Mm-mm. Once they arrived to his house, Michelle then went inside where Ariel said the puppies were, and once she reached the room that the supposed puppies were in on the second floor of the home, Ariel shut the door and locked her in the room, sexually assaulting her and holding her hostage. He tied her and suspended her from the ceiling.
What is up with that? That is so weird. This is the second time somebody has specifically mentioned doing that.
Yeah. And I know I already gave a trigger warning, but this is severely graphic. So proceed with caution, because this is bad. Michelle was repeatedly raped and as a result became pregnant 5 different times. But after Ariel beat and starved her nearly to death, she lost all of her children as a result.
How long was she there?
A while. We'll get more into that.
Okay.
In a bit. But she also...
That's terrible.
Yeah. Sometime during this, Ariel...
Okay, I'm so sorry. I have more questions. How did she know she was pregnant? Like, was she missing her period?
I mean, she had a kid before, so I know she...
I just didn't know if there was, like, another, like, weird twist to this where, like, he was, like, giving her tests so that he could know, or if it was just that she had missed her period.
I think it was probably that she was, like, you know...
She knew her cycle, yeah.
Throwing up and, like...
I got you.
All that stuff.
I was just curious because, like, I just feel like it would be... I mean, obviously, this is absolutely horrific, but I just thought it... I just feel like it would be even weirder if he was, like... I think you're having my baby. Let's take a test together. You know what I mean?
No, it was more that, like, she started gaining weight and he would, like, repeatedly, like, punch her in the stomach until she bled. So, Michelle also said that Ariel gave her a puppy because she needed company. She named the dog Lobo and she loved him dearly and treated him like her child. But Ariel ended up breaking its neck while assaulting Michelle because the dog wouldn't stop barking. Ariel also repeatedly told Michelle that no one was looking for her, which wasn't the case. Michelle was an adult and struggling with everything going on, so everyone honestly just assumed that she took off on her own free will, and the police really didn't investigate her disappearance at all. Her mother, however, did what she could, posting missing person flyers continually. Michelle was removed from the missing persons database on the FBI after merely 1 year of being posted. Michelle remained in Ariel's home suffering this abuse alone until 2003, about a year after her kidnapping, when Ariel again offered a ride to a friend of his daughter's. This time, the victim was 16-year-old Amanda Berry. Amanda was born on April 22nd of 1986. Also growing up in Cleveland, she was walking home from her job at a local Burger King on April 21st, only a day before her birthday. Amanda had called her sister to let her know she was offered a ride, but when police got involved, they also thought that she had chosen to run away on her own free will. Though her mother tried to assure the police that her daughter wouldn't run away, and especially not right before her birthday,
it seemed... Yeah, what a terrible time.
Right. It seemed that they didn't really buy it until one day. About a week after her disappearance, Amanda's mom got a phone call from a man saying, quote, "I have Amanda, she's fine, and we'll be coming home in a couple of days," end quote. Amanda's photo had been shown on the news that day, so they initially believed that it was a prank call. However, investigators were able to determine that the call had came from Amanda's cell phone. This is when the case took a turn, and police no longer marked off Amanda as a runaway. Both Michelle and Amanda were held captive together in Ariel's house when in 2004, a third victim was added. This was when 14-year-old Georgina De Jesus disappeared while walking home from school. Gina was born on April 1st, 1990, in a tight-knit family, also growing up in Cleveland. She attended Wilbur Wright Middle School, which was about a 40-block walk from her home, which is about 2 miles. Her mother had given her bus money for a ride, but Gina often kept her bus fare money and decided to walk, just as she did on April 2nd, the day after her 13th birthday. This is when Ariel Castro, who again happened to be a father of one of Gina's close friends, Arlene, who ironically was the last person to see Gina alive prior to her disappearance. Ariel said that he needed help finding his daughter, and of course, Gina agreed to help.
I'm confused by the timeline. The second girl got kidnapped on April 21st, and this girl got kidnapped on April 2nd.
One was 2003, the other one was 2004.
Oh, so even the girl that the FBI is looking for has been there for a year now. Mm-hmm. Jeez.
Yeah.
Sorry, not to...
No, you're fine.
Going off, I was just like, wait, what?
Yeah, so all of their kidnappings were about a year apart.
A year apart.
Since no one witnessed her abduction, an Amber Alert was not issued after her... I know, that pissed me off. Sorry, Mom.
You couldn't see, but I threw my arms out.
Yeah. So this obviously made her parents furious. As they continued to work with the FBI to find their daughter, they posted flyers and held candlelight vigils. Gina was also posted on America's Most Wanted as a missing person in 2004, 2005, and 2006. And just like the prior two cases, Ariel took Gina to his house where Michelle and Amanda were. Now all three
she
girls...
She was there for a few years.
Mm-hmm.
Jeez, that first girl had been there a long time.
Now all three girls were subjected to the same assault and torture.
How many... Okay. Lots of questions here. First off, the first girl's been there a long time. He has no custody of any of his children.
Mm-mm.
So he's at his house. Are they all in the same room? Does this man have unlimited rooms?
And we'll get into that.
Okay.
Sorry,
it's just a question I have.
No, you're fine. I think I'm going to answer. Like, I think of the questions that you're going to ask, so I make sure I include them, but I'm putting them in the wrong order. So.
You know me so well.
I know.
Okay, I'll be patient. I just feel like I need to ask because if I hold on to my thoughts and we like do all of my questions
you're
at
gonna
the
forget
end,
them.
I forget a lot of mm-hmm. them. And then I go home and I'm like, oh, I really want to know blah, 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 blah. And then I'm mad at myself because I forgot to ask.
I'll get you a book. You can write down.
Okay.
And then,
well, then there'd be like scratching in the background.
True.
I don't think the listeners would like that.
No. Okay, they would be held captive, bound with chains and ropes in the basement, and eventually, after years, Ariel moved them upstairs in barricaded rooms he had built specifically to hold them, with holes to slide food in and out, and plastic buckets for the girls to use as restrooms, which were rarely cleaned or emptied. If it wasn't already extremely obvious, Ariel was a disgusting evil human. He often tried to trick the girls into thinking he accidentally left the door open when he left, and then when the girls would try to escape, he would severely beat them. He also wouldn't let the girls celebrate their birthdays. He instead forced them to celebrate the day he abducted them.
What the heck?
Yeah. During their time being held captive, Ariel had people in and out of his house. Between the guests and family visiting, no one suspected a thing.
How is that possible?
Well, because unlike the Sean Hornbeck case, where he portrayed his hostage as a family member, Ariel kept the three locked up while he had guests over. It is noted...
They didn't bang on the wall.
They were chained, sometimes, like, suspended from the ceiling. And I know for a fact, Michelle, he would put, like, a motorcycle helmet over her head. Yeah.
I'm surprised.
And he also would play, like, extremely loud music.
Okay, that helps.
So, it is also noted that in 2004, Angie Castro, one of Ariel's daughters, received an odd message on her answering machine. This message appeared to be a pocket dial where she heard a woman screaming for someone to get away from her. The police got involved and traced the call to a different house. Though now, Gina's mother believes that the call was mistakenly traced to the wrong house and believes it was from inside Ariel's house.
Let's hope.
Right. Another close call was when police looked into Arlene Castro's stepdad as a possible suspect in Gina's disappearance. since Arlene and Gino were very close friends. Fernando Colon, her stepdad, was cleared, but told investigators they should look into Ariel, as he was known for being violent. Of course, police never followed this up. No, I mean, especially when it's important. Like, this makes me sad. Ariel even went as far as to attend one of the candlelight vigils for Gina.
That makes me mad.
Mm-hmm. Year after year, these women suffered together, but during this time, they picked up on how to handle Ariel and his evil ways. Ariel was a sadist, which is someone who loves seeing and inflicting pain and humiliation onto others. So the girls started hiding their emotions completely, and this is how they lived for years, until one day, Amanda realized something was very wrong. She found out that she was pregnant. Though Ariel did not want a child, he let Amanda continue with the pregnancies, unlike he did with Michelle. And soon after, Amanda gave birth to her daughter in a kiddie pool, inside the house, with no medication, and Michelle at her side. Michelle and Gina were usually kept in the same room, but Michelle was frequently punished as she was rebellious, which I mean, like, she wasn't rebellious. She was literally being held captive, like... I'm sorry, what?
Sorry, she doesn't want to be captive.
Right. She was trying to escape from being tortured. But
I can say, sorry, you're a psychopath.
Literally. Amanda was locked in a small room raising her daughter she named Jocelyn. Amanda tried to make her daughter's life as normal as possible.
I just don't even know what that means, to be honest with you.
Try to?
As normal as possible inside of a prison inside of some psychopath's home where he slides you food under the door and gives you a bucket to pee and poop in.
Right.
I'm sure you're about to tell me, but I'm just not quite sure how she could have made her daughter's life normal in the circumstances that she was living in.
Well, there's no way that she could make it normal, but I think she was doing her best that she could, like, literally, like, trying. You know, obviously there's no way that she could, but, like, I think she was trying to do everything in her power to somewhat make it normal.
Ready for them to be saved. How long till we get to that part? Are they ever saved?
Yes.
Okay, thank God.
But one of the things that she would do to try and make it seem normal is when her daughter was old enough, she would pretend to walk to school.
Her daughter would pretend to walk to school?
Well, Amanda would pretend to walk to school.
How long are these girls there? This is like a lifetime.
Yeah, almost a decade.
Oh my God.
So,
This is, like, unfathomable to me.
Literally.
I am just, like, I can't even understand this, like, the gravity of the situation of being there 10 years. I have not even been alive for 3 decades.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's just mind-blowing.
Right. So, as the years passed, Gina's family kept looking for her. Ariel even saw her mother once, passing out missing person flyers, and took one to show Gina. By this time, it was 2013, 11 years after Ariel abducted Michelle. It was a warm summer day in May when Ariel went to get McDonald's and forgot to lock Amanda's bedroom door behind him. Amanda's daughter, Jocelyn, ran back into her mother's room, saying her dad was gone, as this was not normal for them to be able to move freely about the house when he wasn't home. She said his car was gone also. This was it. For the first time in the 10 years since being captured, did Ariel really forget to lock her door, or was this another mind game like the many he had done before? Yeah. Amanda was unsure, but she knew if it wasn't, this was her only chance to escape and save her life and her daughter's. Amanda ran to the front door, which was wired with an alarm, but she was able to stick her arm through the storm door, which was padlocked. She began screaming for help. She yelled, quote, "Somebody please, please help me. I'm Amanda Berry, please," end quote. This was when a passerby named Charles Ramsey and another named Angel Cordero noticed Amanda pleading for help with her 6-year-old daughter. Her daughter was 6 at this time.
Oh my gosh.
Literally. They were able to break down the door. Charles then called 911, and this is what Amanda told the dispatcher, quote, "I've been kidnapped and I've been missing for 10 years. I am now free." Amanda then begged for them to send police to get Michelle and Gina out. While this was happening, Michelle could hear the banging, but she had no idea. She thought that Amanda was being punished for trying to escape. She had no idea the police were on their way there to end her nightmare after 11 years. Michelle didn't realize she was actually free until the police rammed the door of her room. She fell into their arms, and then the police escorted her and Gina out of the house. Michelle later talked about the moment she left the house, saying, quote, "The first time I was actually able to sit outside and feel the sun. It was so warm, so bright. It was like God was shining down a big light on me," end quote. All three women and Amanda's daughter were taken to the hospital. Gina has permanent damages due to being held in chains for such a long period of time. Some of her bones in her neck fused together. Michelle suffered with vision loss and nerve damage, as well as permanent stomach damage from being abused. I didn't see any injuries for Amanda and her daughter, but I'm sure I imagine they have to have some physical on top of all of the mental damages they now have to recover from. Mm-hmm. Ariel was arrested shortly after the women's escape and charged with 4 counts of kidnapping and 3 counts of rape. 2 of Ariel's brothers were taken in for questioning, but later released and cleared. On June 7th of 2013, a grand jury found Ariel Castro guilty and charged him with 937 counts, including rape, kidnapping, gross sexual imposition, felony assaults, possession of criminal tools, and aggravated murder for the cause of Michelle's unborn children who were killed at the hands of Ariel. These counts were from August 2002 through February 2007, which I'm not sure why, but Ariel pled not guilty and even tried to forego a public trial with his lawyers trying to protect the victims, saying that they didn't want them to have to recount what happened to them in a public court.
Oh, but, yes, that's why you said you were not guilty.
Well, and I just can't imagine being the lawyers that have to defend
mm-hmm, that. Somebody has to.
Right. I don't think you could pay me enough to do that.
I just think they're like, I mean, it's legally required, so somebody has to do it.
Right, but it's just like...
I know, I get it.
It's like...
I wouldn't want to do it either.
Right, if they had to say, like, all the women out there, like, telling what happened, and then a lawyer literally has to argue with them and try to tell them that it didn't happen. Mm-hmm. Like,
I don't think that's what you like to do.
No. But on July 3rd of 2013, Ariel began his pretrial after being found mentally competent. During this, he requested to see Amanda's 6-year-old daughter, but obviously that didn't
happen. Not allowed.
Exactly.
Heather said no.
And so did the court, and I think literally everyone else.
Yes.
He also tried to paint himself as a victim. He said that he was a victim of his sexual addiction, just like the women were.
No.
Mm-hmm.
No, not even close.
Yep. And he also said that his crimes weren't really as bad as they sounded, and the women lived comfortably with him as willing partners. Disgusting. I'm mad.
This is just making me mad.
Yeah. But in the end, on August 1st of 2013, Ariel was sentenced to life in prison plus 1,000 years and fined $100,000. 1 month into serving his sentence at the correction center in Orient, Ohio, at 9:20 p.m. on September 3rd, Ariel Castro was found hanging by a bedsheet in his prison cell and was pronounced dead at the hospital, where they concluded it was suicide. Some said that he didn't mean to commit suicide, but rather accidentally did, by erotic asphyxiation, in which someone cuts their circulation and breathing off for pleasure. But my thoughts either way are, oh well, too bad, bye Rocco. Like, no one misses you, sorry. As for the women's life, since being freed, Amanda Berry and her daughter reunited with their family, though her mother had died in 2006 during her captivity, never knowing what happened to her daughter.
That makes me sad.
I know.
I hate that.
She is now living a quiet life trying to heal. She has been presenting a segment on missing people on Fox News number 8 since 2017. She also has done other work with the U.S. Marshals in locating missing children. Gina De Jesus also reunited with her family and is now helping families of missing children. In 2018, she founded a nonprofit with her cousin called the Cleveland Family Center for Missing Children and Adults. I'll have Heather link that in the show notes as well. She said she tries not to think of her time in captivity and instead focuses on life and the one she's now chosen. She also uses nature to unwind and says people take that stuff for granted. Michelle Knight chose not to reunite with her family after being freed and is now happily married. She has since changed her name, as she said it kept her from being hired at some jobs, but...
Why did she choose not to be reunited with her family?
honestly, I don't know, but I do know that her, like, home life was obviously not good at all. Wow. And she hasn't been able to see her son, but she said that his adoptive parents send her pictures and keep her in the loop on his progress in life. Though she did say she is hopeful to meet him again. She has since written a couple of books, including two about her captivity, one being called Finding Me, A Decade of Darkness, A Life Reclaimed, and the other being Life After Darkness, Finding Healing and Happiness. Gina and Amanda are still friends, but say they no longer speak to Michelle. They have written a book together called Hope, A Memoir of Survival in Cleveland. From what I found out on Ariel's family, his daughters have called him a monster, and his ex-wife unfortunately died of brain cancer in 2012. The only other thing I did want to add is that, remember in the St. Louis's Baby Jane Doe case, and they talked about that psychic, and I said I think that I know the psychic that they were talking about
in Florida.
I never was able to find out if that was. I really looked for like a week, but during her captivity, Amanda Berry's mom went on one of those TV shows with the psychic Sylvia Brown, who I think is the one that did that. And Amanda watched this on TV as the psychic told Amanda's mom that she was dead. So, obviously, this...
I feel like the psychic just needs to go.
Right. Obviously, like, and her mom passed away a couple years after this. So, yeah. I just can't imagine. I know a lot of the girls... Well, not a lot of the girls. I know Gina and Amanda watched their parents looking for them. Gina said that it gave hope to her. Obviously, Ariel used this against Michelle, saying that nobody was looking for her, even though her mom was, which may have played a role into why she didn't want to reunite with them after. Yeah. But that was the disgusting acts of Ariel Castro. And how Michelle Knight, Amanda Berry, and Gina De Jesus. Yeah, I do. Obviously, that is like a horrible story. But I do know that that kind of puts it into perspective that even though it could be a decade, your missing loved ones could still be out there somewhere. I know they were in like a horrible situation, but I know the girls always tell the parents that they work with to never give up hope looking for their kid. Because, I mean, look what happened to them. They were found or really escaped. So
I just can never wrap my head around somebody, like, having a person inside their house for that long. And, like, nobody noticing. And I understand that, like, your guests wouldn't go snooping through your house to look for missing people. But it's just, like, crazy to me that a person like that could have friends and family come over and have a party and just, like, act like they're normal and act like nothing's going on when in reality they're an absolute monster. Like, it just is mind-blowing to me that that happens. And it clearly happens because this is not the only story that we've talked about where that happens. But it's just so hard for me to understand how somebody so messed up can act so normal.
And have friends.
Yeah.
And two, since Gina and one of his daughters, that would be like, I mean, I don't know how close they were, but it seems they were pretty close. So it'd be like if Buddy was like, hey, you want to, do you need a ride somewhere? Obviously, I wouldn't like second guess it.
You'd be like, cool, Buddy's great.
Right. He is. Well, yeah, your dad is not a horrible, like your dad is the nicest person ever.
I know, but when you put it in perspective like that, like I would never in a million years hesitate to get in the car with your dad.
Right.
Never.
So it's just like,
cool, I'm getting a ride.
Yeah. It's just scary that literally monsters walk among us.
Yeah.
That's
the, like, that's the thing that gets me. Like, they literally are, like, integrated into society. Like, he was integrated into society and driving a school bus at the time. Like, that is
with children.
So terrifying.
And, I mean, Gina was literally 12. Like, I know she had turned 13 the day before, but she was literally a child. I just, I don't know. I know there's a movie on it. I think it's called Abductions in Cleveland or something. There's a movie on the story. I can't remember what it's called. I just watched it a couple months ago. And what you're saying about, oh, like, people being there, they did portray in the movie that, like, somebody almost went up, like, his daughter almost went upstairs, but I think they added a lot of filler.
Well, and the the first girl, Michelle, she was his daughter's friend too.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Like, it's just so weird.
Yeah.
Just so weird to think about. I don't think I have any more questions. I just think that he was really crazy, and I don't know if he meant to commit suicide or not, but I guess it's kind of irrelevant because it doesn't matter. He's dead either one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if that gives the girls more or less peace. I don't know that we know that or that they would even comment, but I am curious sometimes.
I feel like it obviously had to have, but it didn't necessarily. So I don't know if you looked at the email. I sent you so many links. There's so many references.
I did not. I don't open the emails.
Oh.
I don't open them until afterwards because I don't want to see anything that I shouldn't see.
Well, I had to look at like three different ones to even figure out like their afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
Not their afterlife, but like what they were doing after. I think it's kind of sad that they're not all friends anymore, but also I don't know like, if I could.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
I mean, I get it. If Michelle needs to step away, I get it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And like they were kind of
But I also understand why Amanda and Gino might cling to one another. You know what I mean? I feel like I get both sides.
Right. Yeah. I do hope, you know, maybe someday she's able to see her kid, though.
Mm-hmm.
But I feel like that's extremely traumatizing, too. Like, mm-hmm. And I can't imagine Jocelyn, that poor child.
100%.
This is just sad.
It, like, gave me chills when you said that Jocelyn came back in and was like, my daddy's gone. And I was like, right. No, he's a monster. He's not your daddy.
Right. And the fact that he had the audacity to be like, I want to see my kid. No, that's no, literally not your kid. Sorry.
Absolutely not.
Disgusting.
I'm glad that they decided that as well because I would have been really mad. I might have thrown my microphone.
Don't throw the microphone.
I'm just saying, like, I would have been really mad.
Yeah.
But.
Okay, so.
Not a drug lord that we know of.
No, and I saw something that said, like, they think he had, like, a bunch of money from, like, being in the drug cartel, but. I don't.
How did I pull that out of thin air?
It is very.
Maybe I heard that when this was coming out and I just like subconsciously filed it back in my memory. I don't know. But anyway.
So that was the case of the miracle in Cleveland.
Mm-hmm.
Our t-shirt giveaway is over.
Yeah. If you didn't or you didn't win. Sorry.
Yeah. But we'll do another. We'll do more.
We will do another one in the future. And if you want to keep listening to our podcast, you can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, and more. And please follow us on TikTok. Please follow us on Instagram. Please join our Facebook group. Please like our Facebook page. We have lots of places for you to join our community. We like talking to you guys. And we will see you here next week with another episode.
And thanks for everybody that did enter the giveaway. You guys are cool. Sorry if you didn't win. Yeah, I think that's it.
Yep.
All right, bye.
Bye.